You're listening to the Reading Envy podcast, where I'll have what you're reading. Hi, everyone. This is Jenny, and today I'm back in the Reading Envy pub with a guest from Canada. It's Lindy. Hi, Lindy.
Hi, Jenny.
Always nice to have you. You can go back and listen to Lindy on episodes 95, 124, and 159. How are you? How have things been?
I'm doing all right, thanks. It's starting to feel like everyday life to be just at home all the time.
I know, it's kind of like a new normal. And you've been doing some interesting, like we follow each other in Litzy, so I saw that you had some art projects going on.
Yeah, I've really got into working with natural dyes. You can get some amazing colors, and I like playing with textiles and using plants from my garden. I've just been having fun.
Beautiful. So the colors I saw were like a pumpkin-y color and maybe like a rosy, almost a rose color.
So that rich orange is from madder root. I don't grow that. I got dye supplies from this company called Mewa in Vancouver, and they source their dyes from cooperatives and the, you know, growers themselves in mostly from India, but also from Mexico and Peru, I think. Mm. Yeah, madder is a dye that's been used for millennia. You know, they've found textiles from 2000 BC. That they can identify that that was what was used to color them red.
Yeah, it's really neat. And no better time than now to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I got a little dye studio set up in my garage. And the thing is, even though they're natural products, you know, you still don't want to eat them. Like even when I'm using avocado skins and pits, and you get a lovely pink from them or a salmon color, you know, that's not the seeds and pits that you eat.
Right.
So always best to not mix up and use the same pots and cook in your kitchen with dyes.
I think the only thing I've used food dyes for is like eggs in the spring, like coloring eggs.
Oh, yeah. Like
cabbage. And of course, yeah. Then you use stuff that you would eat.
Onion skins.
Yeah.
That's great.
So you're in Canada, and the major literary prize there is the Giller Prize.
Yes, it's awarded for fiction or collections of short stories. And this year, for the first time, they've included graphic novels.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You don't see that very often in a literary prize.
Although there was a graphic novel on the Booker list a couple years ago, Sabrina. Remember that?
That's true. That was unusual. That was a really strange year in general. Wasn't that the year there was a crime novel on there too? Like, where is this coming from? Well, okay. So one of the things I know about the Booker Prize is that there's a shadow committee, which is just people who maybe didn't like what was happening. So they came up with their own prize to award books that they felt were worthy. And there's apparently a shadow Giller Prize.
Yes, there is a shadow jury for the Giller Prize, and I am one of the jurors this year. I was invited. I always read lots of Canlit anyway, but suddenly there's a lot more pressure.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of how many books that's going to be?
Well, as far as how many books qualify, because it has to be something that's published between October 2019 and September 2020. And so, you know, there's, I don't know, like somewhere between 130 to 150 books, maybe, or possibly more, but somewhere in that range, I think. I'm going to focus on ones that I think are the most promising. Without reading them all, it's hard to guess, but right now, I've got three that I think are good contenders. You know, I might be foolhardy to say that already because there's still so many that I haven't read. But, you know, for now, I've got three. So I'm going to talk about those today.
Oh, good. So the work of the shadow jury, is that the right word for it? Shadow jury?
Yes.
How will people know what you guys are up to? And is there like a blog or are there videos?
There is going to be a blog, yes. I imagine it will be live soon, perhaps before the show airs. I'll send you the information once it is live. And those of us who are on the jury, I think we all have book blogs as well. So we'll be linking through on our own blogs plus various social media.
Well, I'm looking forward to that because I feel like Canadian literature, I probably have said this before, but for how close in proximity Canada is, I just don't think we hear enough about it. You know, we hear about the UK more than we hear about Canada. So you're doing the important work.
To me, it's fun work.
Yeah. Well, it's nice when it can be both, right?
I feel quite honored to be asked to be on this, but I also feel like it's a big responsibility.
But I know your capacity for very deep and fast reading, so that's good. You thought you're the right person for that.
Thanks.
Well, do you want to share the first one with us that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. So the first one I'll talk about is called Polar Vortex by Shani Mutu. It's a contemporary story set in southern Ontario, and there are three central characters. And in a way, it's a love triangle. The two women who are married, Priya and Alexandra, have got some tensions in their relationship, but they're really undercurrents. Nothing is on the surface. There's just this uneasiness. Alexandra has never met Priya's friend, Prakash. Prakash is a friend from university. Priya moved from Trinidad and Tobago to Canada to attend university and then eventually moved to Canada. And one of the few other South Asians at university at that time was Prakash, whose family was from Uganda. And his family had to leave when all non-Ugandans were kicked out, even if they were born there. So all of the South Asians had to leave, and many of them came to Canada. So they had a long-time friendship where Prakash was interested in Priya, but she was lesbian, so didn't return the affections. But there's a certain amount of friendship and fellowship and support of being of this similar ethnic background. We come back to present day. So after 6 or so years of marriage, and as I mentioned, there's these undercurrents of something is not right in their marriage. And then there's this extra person who comes back. And the whole time I was reading it, I felt like I was sinking into the atmosphere every time I opened the book. Because that tension is really well done, even though it's, you know, like the psychological tension, I guess. There are the issues of immigration and racism in Canada that are also really well portrayed in that way that racism is often unspoken in Canada, and the tensions in the lesbian relationship were unspoken in this particular relationship. Mm-hmm. And so there is just all of this suspense and complex characters, and the viewpoint does switch from person to person. So you get more of a rounded picture, too, of what's going on. I just really loved it. I love character-based fiction. I love fiction that has a strong sense of place, and this one does as well, that in a sort of rural area of southern Ontario.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is because I've never been to Ontario, so southern Ontario, I'm like, I don't know what that means. What is that code for?
Well, a lot of southern Ontario is quite built up with cities.
Because of Toronto, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other cities too. Like a lot of Canada's population is concentrated close to the Canada-US border. Mm-hmm. Even so, there are areas like where these women live. It's sort of an island on Lake Ontario. And so It's more of a tourist place, but not in the winter. And this story takes place in the winter.
And the other question I had is, you know, all these things are unspoken. So how does the author let you know what's going on? Is it the alternating viewpoints that do it?
Partly. And it's because you're in the mind of these, like, why did she say that? Did she mean this? You know, what if I do this, is she going to do, you know, no. Is that kind of carefully examining minute expressions and just those kinds of little details. It also works to ratchet up the suspense. So you're like, what's going to happen? You know, it's going to be an explosion here, you know, virtual explosion.
Is there a large Trinidadian community in Canada? It seems very specific.
Well, there was an influx from the Caribbean over a certain period. I'm sorry, I can't remember exact details of what time period it was, but the rules for letting in non-white immigrants to Canada were really strict, and nurses or nursing assistants and domestic workers, maybe.
Ah, you had to have like a certain type of job.
We're allowed to come in from the Caribbean. Yes. Huh.
Yeah.
Single women only.
It sounds really good. I love relationship novels, even if the relationships are falling apart. It's up my alley for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure that you would enjoy this one. So,
and I have other books by her on my to-be-read list, but I just have never pulled it, but I need to.
Yes. And Sirius Blooms at Night, her first novel, is fantastic.
And that's like C-E-R, right?
C-E-R-U-S. It's the night blooming cactus. Yes.
Oh, okay. Should I move on to my first one?
Oh, please do.
I'm surprised to be talking about this one because it's a YA fantasy novel and I don't usually read those. But sometimes things just grab you. It's Girl Serpent Thorn by Melissa Bashardust. And it came out the day we're recording, July 7th. So I did have a copy from the publisher. The author, this is her second novel. She seems very interested in fairy tales. And so she has pulled elements from both Western and Eastern worlds. And she gets into a lot of depth about it in the back. Like if you're a person who reads the notes, which you know I do, which I found fascinating because I had studied folklore in grad school a little bit too. And, you know, these tales have a lot of things in common, and then they kind of branch off from each other. And even though they've kind of gotten rid of that theory that everything came from the one folktale, there's still a lot of shared themes that you can see all over literature. I also think it's a way, I think the author has some Persian heritage, and so she really wanted to explore that world in the writing too. So the setting is somewhat vaguely Persian. I mean, it's a fantasy novel, so obviously not completely. What it's about is this woman named Saraya, and she is just about coming of age. She has a brother, and he is going to be the Shah. And he moves around, he and all of his minions, his court, I guess, is a better word for it. They move to every seasonal castle so that they can see different parts of the land. But she never leaves. She always stays in this one place. So she only sees her family in the spring. And the reason for that is because her touch is poison. Like she can't be around other people. And even around her family, she wears gloves all the time and they know not to touch her. And, you know, that has some direct roots there, like Rappaccini's daughter and... It kind of has a Sleeping Beauty feeling to it. I was also thinking about King Midas, who turns everyone to gold, which is not really what you want. Her family comes back. The woman that he's marrying is a woman that she was friends / maybe attracted to, but she's never really dealt with those feelings because she could never be close to her. She was as close to her as she could be. And she sees a soldier in the crowd who she's never noticed before, but she notices him noticing her. And so some things start to happen. She starts to question why she's cursed this way. She starts to doubt her mother and think that maybe she's kind of being told that her mother has lied to her. There are these creatures called divs. and it's kind of like a djinn slash demon, and there's three kinds, but they have the ability to, some of them can fly, some of them can burst into flame. And there's this one kind, and I had to write it down so I wouldn't forget, called a parik. The one who gave her the curse is imprisoned in the palace slash whatever we call it. And so she's given this idea of maybe she can talk to this creature and find out why she's cursed and how to undo it. And she goes down to the prison, and the creature just looks like a woman, roughly her age, but she has wings that are damaged. That's just maybe the first third of the novel. And I can't say much more about the rest of it without spoiling some pretty major plot points that are really more fun to uncover. But I did want to read, this is from around when she's first meeting the soldier. And so they're having their first conversation, and he tells her that he knows who she is because his father always told him stories about the people he would encounter. And he said, "Do you see now why I recognized you? You're my favorite story. I feel like I've known you for a long time." Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah.
So I marked that part. There's a lot of just other layers of a story and what makes a story kind of going on in the background too that I feel like you could appreciate or not, depending on if you care about that kind of thing. Because really it's more just like a straightforward, fast-moving fantasy novel with all these elements going on. But it is hard to tell who to trust and who to believe. And there's definitely a moment, I was reading this outside with my dogs, and I was like, what? So that's kind of fun. I like to be surprised. And the tagline on the cover, it says, "Sometimes the princess is the monster."
I already had this on my TBR, and now hearing you talk about it, I know, yeah, for sure. I got to read it soon.
Yeah. I almost didn't talk about it just because I am a little bit sensitive to worrying about cultural appropriation. At this point, I don't know where the lines are.
Well, isn't the author of Persian heritage?
I think so. It seemed like people were saying so. I tried to find a definitive answer and I really couldn't. There's not a lot of information about her. She hasn't been around for very long. And I think because she's YA, I also had like questions of, is this own voices? And you just can't find that information because it's private. I did Google her last name, and most of the people that have her last name live in Iran. So and it's like 14. It's not like a big number. And of course I would feel better about it. I also feel like, I mean, if you're an academic, and she was, and you've done all this research on fairy tale, then you probably have processed it and thought about it in a deeper way too. And the way she's using it is very interesting. It's not othering. So that's good, I think. But yeah, I've been thinking about that all along too. So I didn't want to not say that. I ended up feeling like, I think this is okay. But I could be educated otherwise. I'm not sure. But yeah, I noticed she has another book, because now I'm kind of thinking I should go back and read that one. Girls Made of Snow and Glass. That sounds very fairy tale-ish.
Mm-hmm.
That one was just 2017. So she's not been around that long.
Am I remembering right that her novels have queer content in them?
They do, but it doesn't necessarily show up at the beginning.
Mm. Right.
But the way that it shows up is great. Like, it's worth the payoff. But I mean, I guess you get hints of it with her sadness about the woman her brother is marrying. But, you know, it's not really a definitive thing, but you kind of get the hint of it then, I think. But in reality, she's connected to so few people as a younger person. She only really sees her mother, her brother, and then Layla, this random friend. So, because she was never afraid of her. And that was very appealing to her, of course, because nobody knows. If they knew, they'd be afraid, right? But she's just kept from them. So her family, in some ways, has done her a great service in not letting people know what has happened, but she's very isolated. And I definitely identified with the isolation part of the novel too, which was
funny. Yeah, it's interesting how everything we read now is through a new filter.
Don't touch. You have to wear gloves. Yeah. There she is. Well, we can go to your next one if you'd like.
This second book is also written by a South Asian author, Vivek Shreya, who is originally from Edmonton. I just remembered, I think you talked about this on a recent Reading Envy, but I'm going to talk about it anyway.
Please.
I love it.
I did, but I loved it.
It's okay. You know which one it is, the subtweet. I think I've read all of Vivek's books. I used to work with Vivek at the public library. Vivek was a teenager then, a student page.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yes. So, multi-talented visual artist, musician, writer. She's trans. And in this particular novel, one of the great things is that there's at least one and possibly two or maybe more trans women in it, but that is not at all an issue. You know, the novel is about friendship between women, and all of these women are South Asian, all living in Toronto. So just like with Polar Vortex, this is a real character-based novel, although there's a lot more plot to this one. So if that's something that you're looking for, then, you know, there's a page-turner quality to it. But again, we've got perspective that moves from one character to another. So the first section is in the voice of Neela, who's a musician who composes alternative music and has been for years, but has never been interested in fame and popularity. And then there's a young woman, Rukmini, who covers one of Neela's songs and it ends up being a big hit. They end up getting to know each other. And then the other voices are Malika and Sumi. This novel really captures the way that miscommunication and misinterpretation of our words can happen so easily, especially via social media. It's just so easy to accidentally hurt someone or be misunderstood, and for friendships to collapse on that. All of the insecurities, but also I really liked that these voices were within the novel, the majority voices. There's a white character in there as well that's fairly prominent. But so much of our literature in Canada is written by white people, and white people are the norm for the characters. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate being inside brown women's heads and experiences of, again, racism in Canada and coping strategies. So even though that's not what the novel is about, it's just one of the things that these women have to deal with. And there's also the issue of, it's like there's only room for one brown star, you know, whether it's at, you know, in a university class or, you know, on the music scene.
Right. I don't know what the word is, but it's just like all the white people get their own opinions, right? But then they expect the one brown person to have that community's opinion.
Yeah. That there's a singular South Asian Canadian voice. Yeah. All of those complexities and subtleties really make this a rich story. And then the emotions really come through in this. In Polar Vortex, it's a lot more intellectual. There's secret keeping going on, you know, and again, that's part of the suspense, because you don't, as a reader, you don't know what the secrets are at the beginning. You can just tell that there's stuff there, but it's much more of a mind game about, you know, just not knowing other people, or you think you know someone, but you know, you really have no idea. Whereas with the subtweet, a lot of the action is happening way more on an emotional level, although it's the same problem of assumptions about what other people are thinking and saying and not really knowing.
I thought that part was brilliant. I mean, you kind of wanted to scream at them, like when you're watching like a soap opera, like, just talk to each other.
Yes. It's like, no.
Because at the same time, there's so much, I guess, relief at first that they find each other and they get along. Because I think Neela is pretty critical mm-hmm. at the beginning. She's not the one who did the cover, right? She's the original.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get the names mixed up.
Cover.
But like, she's all ready to hate her, but then she doesn't. And like, she really has respect for her music. And then Neela's also surprised and impressed by what Rukmini does with it. And they actually find a relationship there. And then it's like, she can't even trust that it would last, which was sad too.
Yeah. But that whole issue of trust, as a reader, you can understand that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can understand why there's mistrust and hesitancy about opening up. You know, they feel like such real women. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah. People who have been hurt before. And so it takes a lot to even get to that point.
Yeah.
They're also, at the same time, very ready for it to go badly. No, so, so true. It just felt very true. I also should say, and I talked about this on the episode with Thomas, that you can get those songs on Vivek's Spotify. And I actually have them. I always add songs that I like to this ongoing playlist every year. And so every once in a while, I just have the Neela version because I feel loyal to Neela. But, you know, it starts like, I got your hair caught in my teeth again. I don't want to spit it out.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad that you mentioned that. So yeah, inside the front cover, there's a link that you can go to access the music online. Yeah, it's fabulous. It's fabulous.
Yes. Ugh, I'm so glad that you read it and loved it.
I would be really happy to hear, you know, that this one wins the Giller Prize. It could. I think it could.
I think it's almost deceptively, I don't want to say the word simple. No, it's not simple, but maybe it's short. That's a good word. It's over pretty quickly. And then I'm still thinking about it now. Like, I read this book 2 months ago. Because it just, they feel like real people. Like, I kind of want to know, well, where are they now and what's happening to them?
Yeah. And that's a sign of a really good book, I think, when it lives on beyond the page. And for me also, it's a good sign when I want to reread. Because I don't reread a lot. The books that really had an impact on me, I will happily reread.
Yeah. Well, last time I checked, the audiobook version of the book is in Spotify as well. And it's read by the author. So maybe that can be a nice way to reread it.
Oh, yeah. You know, you said this one's a short, it's 235 pages.
I think the one I read, the fonts were big and the, you know, in between, like the words on the beginning of each chapter would take up a lot of space. So it just didn't feel like, it just felt like you could just keep going, you know, it's very inviting, kind of like a magazine.
There is a lot of dialogue and text messaging.
Yes.
So that helps to make for quite a speedy read. In some cases, putting in a lot of dialogue is kind of like filler. I feel that it's the conversations that are telling the story. Vivek has done a really good job with that, with the dialogue, that's part of why it seems so real.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hard to do.
And I think there are those moments where the characters decide not to return a text that tell you the most.
Yes.
Like, this is too important, so I'm going to wait until I see this person, and then it's interpreted completely the opposite. Those moments are like, those are so real. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. And meanwhile, the person on the other end is waiting. How come she's not responding?
She doesn't care about me. I misinterpreted everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it makes sense because Vivek, doesn't she write song lyrics and poetry as well?
Oh, yeah.
It makes sense that a book would have more conciseness.
So tell me about the book you've got.
I am picking another book that's from a similar region as my first, although it's not a fantasy novel. So I feel like it is a whole new world. It's called Daughters of Smoke and Fire by Ava Homa. The author is Kurdish. She's from the region we know as Kurdistan, which is not an officially recognized state. So technically, she's from Iran. She got a lot of her higher education outside of her country, and she actually wrote this novel in English, but it's her debut novel. And it is about a woman named Layla. Layla and her brother Chia, and their father, he's not allowed to work because he's considered an enemy of the state, even though he's done his prison sentence, so he's out of prison, but he can't get a job. He can't be gainfully employed because it's kind of like he's illegal, like a known legal illegal person. And that's been declared by Iran. And so, of course, the family is also watched. And both Layla and Chia are trying to go to school, but there's a lot of similarities, interestingly, between the indigenous populations of North America and how they're treated and how the Kurdish people are treated in their locations. They're forced to do schooling in other languages than their own. They aren't given the best land to live in. They aren't allowed to do certain industries, to pursue certain careers. They're like intentionally kept poorer and less advantaged than other people in Iran. And she talks about this throughout the book. And education's a big one. And so Layla is oldest. She wants to be a filmmaker. And she's smart and she tries. But at home, her mother expects her to do the cooking because she has to work since her husband can't. And so Layla has to study less because she has to cook dinner for her brother. If you can imagine how that relationship is going. And her brother is younger, but he doesn't have to do any of the female tasks. She also has to do a lot of the cleaning, childcare of relatives at times. And so everything is dependent on how well she does in her final exams. It's like a statewide exam program. And basically the top people go to the top school and get to be doctors and lawyers. The next people down get to go to college, but the government tells you what you're going to major in. And if you don't want to major in it, you can be in the military. So, you know, your scores are everything. And her scores just aren't even high enough to rank. So she doesn't get to go to college. And her brother gets sent to college, but for a degree that he doesn't want. And so he kind of wastes that opportunity and becomes a revolutionary instead. But I mean, it was kind of always going to happen. He's always been a big thinker and, you know, change maker. And of course, he's seen how his father has suffered and his community has suffered. And so at some point, their friend Caro, he's male. I don't know how you say his name, though. He and Chia are going to a protest and Layla pleads with them to stay home. And then Chia doesn't come home. And for 120 days, they don't even know if he's alive or where he is. And so then on top of all of her other jobs, cooking, cleaning, she has to also try to find her brother in prison, try to get legal counsel, try to figure out what happened without getting imprisoned herself. There's a lot of monitoring of both the moral code. So, you know, is her skirt long enough? Is she taking out a book that's outlawed at the library? Like everything's being watched in that regard. And then also her right. internet.
just the general public is just watching all the time. Is that what you mean?
It does seem like it's government related, but there's different patrols, different organizations. And I do think that her family and their community is getting more monitored because they're Kurdish. And so they're always waiting for the next, you know, flare up. I mean, they've had these massive events where, you know, entire blocks of people would be killed. It just always feels violent every day. And there is some commentary in here about how much of an education can you get if you're being traumatized every day with bombing and things like that. There are days where they can't go to school. So it's difficult. The interesting thing is, I mean, it's very realistic and it's very true to the Kurdish experience now. But I love the character of Layla because she has this very strong creative spark. She sees films in her head. She's always devouring content if she can get it legally or illegally. So there is a library, but she also has access to some like bootleg films and some black market DVDs and stuff like that. And she just takes a lot of risks to try to consume them. And she also has educated herself a lot. So she quotes Rumi to help her feel better. There's this whole poem in there that it's like, dance when you're broken open, dance if you've torn the bandage off. And so she's very internally motivated to just keep going, keep going, keep trying, which I think must take a lot of energy.
Well, it's inspiring to read about a character like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the writing in this book, there was one point I even looked something up because I was like, did she write these words or is this like a reference to something? There's one like, it's dark comedy, the way tiny tyrants demand democracy. It might be also because I might refer to a certain leader of a certain country as a cranky little despot. It sounded kind of similar to that. I'm just learning a lot by reading literature from the actual countries of the Middle East. That's kind of my focus this year. I think one of the things that's really being driven home for me is the impact of daily danger. So not just interpersonal violence, but actual danger from like bombs and shootings, and for that to be in your life every day and how that affects you. And it's daunting, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I found that my heart has opened up to what life must be like for people living in Palestine and Israel and other parts of the Middle East where there's, you know, you're on heightened alert all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened through reading fiction mostly.
And I did some digging about the author, you know, because I think it's interesting that she wrote this in English. She's obviously very talented. And she was saying that the landscape that Layla lives in is the same, but Layla is not her. And the big difference is that she was able to leave for her education and prioritize that in a way that Layla couldn't.
Right.
And how much of a difference that made for her compared to, you know, not everyone gets that opportunity. And I liked reading about her talking about that. I might actually link to that interview because I thought it was really interesting. But I also just feel bad for her father. Like, you have this man, he's fairly healthy. I mean, he's been in prison, but he's, you know, he's not dysfunctional, but he's like literally not allowed to do anything. But at the same time, he's not going to cook or clean because culturally, that's not his role either. So yeah. He was kind of an interesting character too.
So there's kind of injustice all around happening.
Yes.
And you know, all the different layers, I should say, of injustice.
Right. And some of them are perpetuated by the people inside of it, and they don't even realize that they're doing that. Yeah. But I think novels like that can kind of shine lights into those corners.
Yeah, definitely. The last book I'm going to talk about, this one is by a Laotian Canadian. It's called How to Pronounce Knife, and it's by Suvankan Thamavongsa. So it's a collection of short stories. The people in these stories are Laotian refugees. They have all kinds of jobs. You know, they're bus drivers, they're beauticians, farm laborers, they're factory workers, ordinary people. They all have their own self-confidence and integrity. It's like their sense of home is within their own self. That was the impression that I got anyway. But, you know, I'm always interested in stories about people who've been displaced, whether by choice or not, as in the case of refugees. And, you know, and then, you know, what the feeling of home is. These people really use laughter. There's that real power in using humor and laughter to get through life. The stories are told with a lot of compassion and heart. I would say they're quiet sorts of stories, nothing too shocking. If we had video, you would see that I'm rubbing my fingers like texture. It's like I'm trying to explain the quality. It's like there's a porous sort of quality to these stories where there's all of this room outside of the story where you can imagine what these individuals were like before we got into the story and where they're going after and other things happening around them. There are those kinds of stories that just seem so full, even though they're not long.
So they're kind of like snapshots in a way?
Yeah, I would say, yes, snapshots, sure. There are some pretty devastating things happening, but told with a kind of quiet sense of humor that helps to bring balance to that. And as I said, so much laughter as well. It's very, very moving and powerful. There wasn't a bad story in here. I can read you the opening of the first story, which is the title story, How to Pronounce Knife. The note had been typed out, folded over two times, and pinned to the child's chest. It could not be missed. And as she did with all the other notes that went home with the child, her mother removed the pin and threw it away. If the contents were important, a phone call would be made to the home. And there had been no such call. And this particular story is about language and the power of language, How to Pronounce Knife. I just love this book.
Have you ever read The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down, that book?
No, I haven't. I know it's about the Hmong people.
Yeah. And it's, I guess from Laos too, but maybe not the same people group. Yeah. The big takeaway there was not just how different the languages are, but just the cultural thinking. And
yeah,
that teacher doesn't have any way of knowing that that's how the parent is reacting, right? Because they're not in the same room when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so the teacher probably thinks they're doing everything they're supposed to do. And the parent is like, it must not be important.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a theme of miscommunication today, a little bit.
True. That's true. Yes, I have all South Asian ethnic background authors, and they're all quite different from each other, but definitely communication is a common theme there.
It's funny. We found it. There's always a secret theme, right?
Oh.
That's great, though. I mean, that's three books that came out in the last year that are South Asian authors who live in Canada and are being published in Canada.
Yeah.
That feels good.
Well, and it also feels like to be published and not white, you have to be extra good.
Hopefully that part of it can change.
Oh, I hope so. These are all outstanding.
They sound so good. And I am definitely going to start following you and to hear about all the other books that are out there and what your shadow panel decides. It's very exciting.
The long list will be announced right at the beginning of September. They don't have a date yet, but last year it was around September 3rd. And that was, I don't know, 10 or 12 titles, something like that.
Okay.
And then right at the end of September, they will announce the short list,
which
is like 5 or 6 titles, something like that. And the winner is announced in November. So none of those dates have been set yet.
And that's the Shadow Prize or the regular?
That's the regular Giller. And it's a big, I don't know, $100,000 prize for the author who wins.
And so then the Shadow Panel, do you pick your long list after you've seen their long list?
What we're going to do is we're going to, as much as possible, read all the long list and comment on that and come up with our short list and our winner before.
Ah, okay.
Of the winner. I don't know all of the mechanics of that, but it's tricky because there are a number of books that are just coming out in September, so they will qualify. And these are all books that I'm quite excited about, or the end of August, because Helen Humphrey, new one coming out the end of August. Thomas King has a novel coming out. There's a whole bunch that are coming out in September that I'm thinking, oh, that's probably going to be good. That one's probably going to be good.
I bet you can get the publisher. I bet you can get the publisher to send them to you.
I'm going to be reading, reading, reading.
The Giller Prize thing is very exciting. Is there anything that you're excited to read next or that you're already reading now?
I am reading one that's also a possibility for the Giller. It is called Vanishing Monuments, and it's by John Elizabeth Stinsey. who's a non-binary author, and the novel is mostly set in Winnipeg in the cold rain. It's another atmospheric novel that I'm reading it slowly, not because I don't like it. The writing is actually gorgeous, but it's very, very internal and circular. It seems to be kind of about memory. I'm only about a quarter of the way into it now, but it's quite unique. And I feel like it does something to my brain when I'm reading it.
That sounds interesting, though.
The basic story is of a non-binary person who has to come back to the place where they grew up, which is Winnipeg, because mother is dying. And so there'll be some kind of confrontation, I think, you know, a parent-child relationship.
It's not easy. That sounds good. The book that I recently started last night, actually, is Crooked Hallelujah by Kelly Jo Ford. And it's about, well, it starts in the 70s, but I think it's supposed to follow four generations of women who are part of the Cherokee. So it starts out in Oklahoma, but it's already relocated to Texas. So we'll see where it goes. And the interesting thing so far is that part of the family is deeply embedded in the holiness movement. So like super conservative Pentecostal, don't wear makeup, don't cut your hair type people.
Right.
So that's an interesting element of the family. Good so far.
There's so many good books. Every time I talk to you, I've already, or if I listen to you know, someone else that you're talking to on your podcast, I've got my list of TBRs longer.
It's crazy. And sometimes other people will get to books people have talked about before I get to them. And so they're like off posting about like, I read this book that I heard about. And I was like, I haven't read it yet. The one I finally started is the Patricia Reedy, you know, the chocolate pot. I can never remember the name of it.
Cecilia.
Sorcerer and the Sorcerer?
Sorcery and Cecilia.
Sorcery and Cecilia. Yes.
The magical chocolate pot. It's got a really long title.
Yeah. So I have started that one, but I'm enjoying it. I don't know why I keep pulling away and reading other things. It's been a thread. I've seen a lot of people who I'm connected to read that one in the last month or so. So that's been kind of fun.
That was one that we read in my YA book club years ago. We still mention it now and then in comparison to some current thing that we're reading.
That's amazing. I love it when books stick around like that. And I had never heard of it. This is why I like having so many different people on the podcast, because everyone has a different focus and they hear about books in different ways. It's good. Well, thank you, Lindy, so much for being on, of course. I always get great book suggestions from you.
It's a great pleasure to talk to you, Jenny. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Reading Envy podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Reading Envy, or find a complete listing of our podcast episodes, as well as all of the books discussed on today's episode at readingenvy.com.